Welcome to your midday NTD News. I'm Emily Ho. Millions of people along southeastern U.S. are preparing for the worst this Labor Day. Hurricane Dorian has just been downgraded from a Category 5 to a Category 4. It's the second strongest Atlantic storm on record, pounding the Bahamas last night. It is forecast to move dangerously close to Florida in the next 2 days.
Right now, the powerful hurricane is tearing through the northern Bahamas, leaving behind a trail of destruction. Amid dire warnings from officials along the southeastern U.S., Florida's National Guard is preparing 4,500 soldiers for emergency response.
The Florida National Guard will have 4,500 soldiers and airmen activated and ready to respond. They have 15 rotor wing helicopters available. An additional 24 have been offered from regional National Guard locations. And the active Army component has pre-positioned 40 additional helicopters near our state border to respond if needed.
Forecasts predict a tropical storm force winds could begin to move into the Florida Peninsula on Monday morning, likely occurring first in the West Palm Beach, Port St. Lucie area.
I want to remind our residents to take Hurricane Dorian very seriously. It is a Category 5 very powerful storm. It can be tempting to look at those spaghetti models and that track and hope for that turn to the north.
Mandatory evacuations have been ordered in low-lying coastal areas of Martin County, Palm Beach County, Brevard County, St. Lucie County, and St. Johns County. While many areas are under hurricane warnings and watches, South Carolina's southern coast is also facing evacuations.
So all we know is it's possibly the biggest. I'm not sure that I've ever even heard of a Category 5. I knew it existed, and I've seen some Category 4s. You don't even see them that much, but a Category 5 is something that I don't know that I've ever even heard the term, other than I know it's there.
Several Florida highways will suspend tolls to ease the evacuation efforts, while some residents plan to ride out the storm and hope for the best.
The president elected to stay in the U.S. with news of Dorian approaching, and today Vice President Mike Pence departing from Warsaw following a two-day visit joining world leaders to pay tribute to Poland on the 80th anniversary of World War II.
Pence on Sunday paid tribute to all those who had lost their lives in pursuit of a victory for freedom.
We'll continue to stand with all of our allies for our common defense. And America and Poland will also continue to call on our allies to live up to the promises that we've made to one another.
Around 10 million Poles live in the United States, making them one of the country's biggest ethnic minorities. Pence said Monday he was happy that Poland is nearly eligible for a visa waiver program.
Happy to report to you today that the United States intends to nominate Poland as soon as it meets its requirements.
He also signed a joint declaration with Poland on 5G network security. The United States has been putting pressure on its allies to exclude Chinese telecoms giant Huawei from the rollout of 5G mobile networks. In his meeting with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, Pence said that the U.S. will support Ukraine regarding Crimea.
I can assure you that we will continue to stand with the people of Ukraine on your security, on territorial integrity, including Ukraine's rightful claim of Crimea.
Pence is next headed for Ireland, Iceland, and Britain. President Trump elected to forgo the trip because of Hurricane Dorian. NTD News.
The death toll in a West Texas shooting rampage has increased to 7 as authorities investigate why a man who was stopped by state troopers for failing to signal a left turn opened fire and fled, shooting over 20 people in the process. Investigators don't yet have a motive for the shooting.
According to Odessa Police Chief Michael Gerke, those who were killed ranged in age from 15 to 57 years old. Among the victims was Mary Granados, a 29-year-old mail carrier who was on the phone with her twin sister as she neared the end of her shift. A 17-month-old girl and 3 law enforcement officers were also among the injured. Seth Ader began spraying the roads with bullets, with what police described as an assault-type weapon, after being pulled over for failing to use his signal.
That's when he shot the officer and then took off and started shooting randomly.
Police said he then hijacked a postal truck and drove to Odessa, about 20 miles away. He killed 7 people and wounded 22 others before authorities rammed the hijacked mail carrier truck and gunned him down.
I think we're all frustrated. If you look at the numbers, we're looking at an active shooter every other week in this country. When you look at the numbers, the FBI did a study on all the active shooters from 2000 through last year. The numbers keep going up.
Authorities say they believe Ader acted alone, but have not yet determined a motive. The New York Times reported that the 36-year-old had been fired from his job hours before the massacre. FBI Special Agent in Charge Christopher Combs says investigators are combing through 15 crime scenes and multiple cars, but at this point do not believe it was an act of terrorism. A vigil to commemorate the victims was held in Odessa shortly after the tragedy.
And in Hong Kong, on the first day of school, thousands of students today boycotting classes and rallying for democracy, coinciding with the call for a general strike.
Tens of thousands of students gathered at Chinese University of Hong Kong. They fear their freedoms are being slowly eroded by the Communist Party rulers in Beijing, a charge China denies.
Because it somehow affects our future. We don't want our children to live under a society that is unfair, injustice. And I think that this is the minimum that we can do, and to skip our classes, but to join this event.
Jackie So, president of the University Student Union, said 30,000 students attended the campus rally. Secondary students who also skipped classes rallied in Edinburgh Place. The backdrop on the stage there read, "With no future, there is no need to go to class." This is the first of a planned two-day strike. Meanwhile, hundreds of staff from Queen Mary Hospital formed a human chain in support of the protesters. Some workers also went on strike, braving strong winds outside as a typhoon threatened. About 40,000 people joined a rally in Tamar Park near the Hong Kong Legislative Council building.
Also in Hong Kong, police blocking people's plans to protest over the weekend on the fifth anniversary since the Chinese regime denied Hong Kongers democratic elections. NTD's Jeremy Sandberg is in Hong Kong to report the developing situation.
Following the arrest of several pro-democracy activists, Hong Kong's government was accused of inciting white terror, a common Hong Kong phrase used to describe a climate of fear. Activists say the government is trying to stop people from organizing and attending events.
Absolutely against the human right, because we are just standing out to fight for what our basic human right. And they arrest those people who didn't against any laws at their home. So
Hong Kongers are pressing the government to meet their demands, centered around an independent police inquiry and complete withdrawal of a suspended extradition bill that would allow fugitives to be sent to mainland China for trial.
To fight for our freedom, okay? The government has not listening to what we are demanding for, okay? We have been struggling for not 3 months, but actually 30 years since the Tiananmen massacre. I was born in Hong Kong, and it is so important that we come out, be part of it, and tell everyone in the world that what we fight for.
Although police banned the weekend protests, organizers decided to call the march a prayer walk for Hong Kong sinners, since religious activities do not require police approval.
We are not want to conflict with the government, but we want to say that we need some rights, human rights.
Protests escalated throughout the evening on Saturday, with police firing tear gas and rubber bullets off the roof of the government building and blue dye from their water trucks. Banning the events and rounding up and arresting pro-democracy activists and lawmakers didn't seem to have much of an effect of intimidating the public, as protesters gather in large number to march in the streets, chanting slogans demanding their freedom. Jeremy Sandberg, NTD News, Hong Kong.
A video of a Western man arrested in Hong Kong last Saturday has gone viral as Chinese state-run media tried to link him to the CIA. Footage of the incident was captured by photographers from NTD's partner media, Epoch Times, who were there on the ground.
Footage showed the man being arrested inside a Hong Kong subway station while on his way home. This amid increasing allegations of police brutality, some of the worst in over 3 months of demonstrations.
It is rule of law or not! Rule of law or not! Rule of law! It says
before he was arrested, police said they were investigating without providing further details. Less than a day after the incident, reports have circulated on Chinese media that the man is suspected of being a CIA commander in Hong Kong. This follows Chinese propaganda that the ongoing protests have been incited by foreign forces. The Chinese regime has launched an extensive social media disinformation campaign against the protesters in Hong Kong. This includes spreading rumors that the protests are the work of terrorists, fomented by Western powers and radical forces.
More from a Hong Kong correspondent, where the international airport was a scene of discontented travelers as the MTR shut down trains to deter pro-democracy protesters from going there, and the people of Hong Kong erecting barriers to press the government to meet their demands. NTD Jeremy Sandberg was on location to find out what protesters are experiencing.
Although the protests initially started over a proposed extradition bill that would allow the Chinese regime to transfer individuals to mainland China for trial, given China's disregard for rule of law, the proposal drew widespread concern that dissidents and critics of the Chinese regime would be punished. Most of the protesters wear masks and are reluctant to give their full names, fearing retaliation from Hong Kong's government and the Chinese communist regime.
We're just trying to be protesting peacefully instead of being aggressive or throwing bricks or whatever that is. But we're just trying to speak out our voice and do what we have to do.
Protesters have five demands for the government: that the bill be fully withdrawn, for authorities to retract their previous characterization of protesters as rioters, for arrested protesters to be exonerated, for an independent inquiry into police use of force, and for open, direct elections.
Five demands. Hope the government listen.
Many Hong Kongers feel it is a responsibility and an obligation to protest for the five demands. Citizens have become frustrated with Chief Executive Carrie Lam's lack of response and for saying the government does not accept the five demands.
Her feedback is not polite and I don't feel she wants to solve the problem in Hong Kong.
On Saturday, police stormed into train cars in the Prince Edward MTR station using batons and pepper spray on passengers. Some police were seen beating suspected protesters, leaving several passengers bloodied.
The incident yesterday, I think, is nearly a terrorist attack because the police went into the train to beat people up. Like, they are not even protesters.
The train line is closed. The buses are shut down. Even the roads are blocked off. But that doesn't stop these protesters from walking the 45 minutes it takes to get here to let the government know they're not giving up on their five demands. Jeremy Sandberg, NTD News, Hong Kong.
In August, China slapped tariffs on $75 billion worth of U.S. imports. Some of that, which is set to take effect December 15th, will raise costs on recycled products from the U.S.
On Monday, the U.S. began tariffing $112 billion of Chinese goods at 15%. China has retaliated with more tariffs set to take effect on December 15th. Among the products that will be affected, old corrugated cardboard, newsprint, and some higher-grade recycled fibers. Tariffs on those will rise from 25% to 30%.
But I think it also China requires that volume. So as China's growth, it's going to require the recycling products to make products out of it because it manufactures quite a bit of things.
China remains the largest market for old U.S. corrugated cardboard. In the first half of this year, China imported 2.24 million tons of old corrugated cardboard and 900,000 tons of the additional recovered fiber from the U.S. Since last year, China has restricted the import of foreign solid waste, mainly plastics, paper, and scrap metal.
More than half of the recyclables, 17 million tons a year, went from the United States to China. It was a very significant component, and now it's less than half of that.
However, China still has a large demand for raw materials. Some Chinese companies have started to invest in American recycled paper mills. Those products they then ship to China.
Where I see this happening is circular economy. You're going to make the product, and then that product is what's going to be able to be shipped out, not the recyclable.
The United States and China are still planning to hold trade talks later this month. But with a breakdown in talks before, what will come of them is hard to predict. Reporting by Kitty Wong, NTD News.
And what is the solution for the achievement gap in public schools? A school diversity panel in New York City has come up with one answer: eliminate screenings in schools. but the plan aiming to address racial inequality is facing backlash from some who say the city is targeting high-performing schools, but doing nothing to help the struggling ones. NTD's Penny Zhou has more.
The panel's plan published earlier last week suggests the city to get rid of academic screening in elementary, middle, and high schools, saying that selective schools tend to have disproportionately more white and Asian students. The Gifted and Talented program, one of the targets of the diversity plan, enrolls 40% Asian students, followed by 33% whites, 12% Hispanics, and 9% African Americans. However, African American and Hispanic students make up 70% of the city's entire student population. Max Eden, an education expert from the Manhattan Institute, said that although standardized tests that are currently used to select students do need reform, the education policy trend in New York reflects a deeper problem.
Here, what's at work is this kind of identity politics logic that all disparities must be a product of discrimination, that doesn't just say that we should try to close the achievement gap by lifting people from the bottom up, but also it's unfair that people are doing well, so we have to tear them down too.
The diversity panel is appointed by the city's mayor, Bill de Blasio, who is also a Democratic presidential candidate who sees desegregating public schools as a priority. Eden points to a staff training material by the city's Department of Education.
In that slide, he defines white supremacy as perfectionism, sense of urgency, worship of the written word, objectivity. So there's this ideology that equates the constituent components for excellence and for human performance and student achievement as being effectively white supremacy.
However, he said that Asian students have become an uncomfortable point for such narrative, since many of them come from low-income immigrant families. He said the plan may achieve the opposite effect it's aiming for. While rich parents can move their kids to private schools,
immigrant communities of parents who are trying to instill values of hard work and academic achievement and excellence will be in a really tough spot.
The teachers' union raised concerns for the plan as well. Michael McGrew, head of the United Federation of Teachers, said that to integrate schools and improve education quality, the city should expand the gifted program, not eliminate them. The mayor hasn't made the decision of whether or not to adopt the plan and said he will after assessing it. Penny Zhou, NTD News.
Now to Thailand, where a joint U.S.-ASEAN naval exercise began today, and the U.S. Deputy Pacific Fleet Commander underlining Washington's commitment to a free and open Indo-Pacific.
The joint operation involves 8 warships and 4 aircraft from 7 countries and more than 1,000 personnel. It was first proposed in 2017, but takes to Southeast Asian waters at a time of increasing tension between the U.S. and China over Beijing's territorial claims in the South China Sea. Several ASEAN countries have territorial claims that overlap with Beijing's, raising concerns of a maritime clash.
We will continue to stand shoulder to shoulder with all nations who share a mutual respect for and adherence to international law, as well as a vision of free and open Indo-Pacific.
The exercise will work on interoperability in maritime asset tracking and division tactics, as well as practicing search and seizure operations. NTD News.
Also in Thailand, South Korea's president meeting the Thai Prime Minister today during his first official state visit for bilateral talks to increase economic cooperation between the two countries.
The two leaders held a meeting in Bangkok and later announced their aim to strengthen strategic partnerships during a joint statement.
This is a good sign for our two countries to strengthen our strategic partnership and drive concrete results, and to support the development of both countries for stability and security.
Prayut and Moon also witnessed a signing ceremony of 6 memorandum of understanding agreements in various aspects like water resource management, Korean language proficiency, the exchange of news intelligence in the high-ranking military levels, trade, transport, as well as cooperation in developing smart city initiatives.
The remarkable development of the relationship between our two countries began with the sacrifices of Thai veterans, who were the first to rush to Korea in our hardest times during the war. On behalf of the Korean people, I pay tribute to those Thai veterans. I am confident that our relationship will deepen based on the trust and friendship we have created.
Moon's visit to the Southeast Asian region is in accordance with South Korea's new southern policy to promote interactions and cooperation with each of the 10-member Association of Southeast Asian Nations, including Thailand as a chair this year, according to a Thai government house press release. Reporting by Emily Ho, NTD News.
And back home, a 61-year-old crossing 12 states in 12 weeks by foot, wheel, and pedal. NTD reporter Eileen Eng joined her at the Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco to hear about those travels.
As of this Saturday, Jane Sullivan will be completing her 12-week journey across the U.S., which she calls American Walk of Life, or AWOL.
This is Vista Point. We are north of the Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco. This is also where we're meeting Jane so that we can join her in her journey across the Golden Gate Bridge, which is covered by Carl the Fog at the moment. Hopefully that'll clear up later on in the day.
She started in Delaware on June 5th and made her way west across 12 different states.
And each state I've had a different pilot, driver of my RV, so that I have somewhere to be safe in an evening when I'd finished my hiking or biking, whichever it may be.
So what was it like traveling across the states?
They were all brilliant in their own way, but all different.
She stayed in California most of her life, so she learned a lot after meeting people in so many other states.
For instance, plastic bags. In West Virginia, they would triple bag something, a carton of milk in plastic. And in California, I couldn't get a straw. I've seen children doing their own chores all along through America, mowing grass and helping with the chores. And yes, ma'am, no, ma'am, which I haven't seen here in California. So I see the stark difference of like old-time America to the modern California that I've only been used to.
She said people welcomed her wherever she went.
I was staying in people's homes. People were offering to do my laundry, inviting me around to have a meal with them. Really, really lovely, lovely people.
Sullivan was inspired after learning about Mary Joyce, a pioneer in Alaska in the 1930s. She realized that as people get older, they tend to sit and regret that they did not make memories.
Maybe try and paint a painting or throw a pot or garden and plant some trees, but something that when you're in your old age, you could say, I did that. Look what I did with my life.
She's also doing this to inspire the younger generation to put down their electronics and get out there and experience the world themselves. She describes this experience as life-changing.
I did love America before I left California to go on this journey, and now I'm really in love with America, and I want to return to Middle America.
I just crossed the bridge, so now I'm on the San Francisco side, south of the Golden Gate Bridge. And so Jane and her team will continue on her journey to the Cliff House before having a party and then going home in La Honda. Eileen Ng, NTD News, San Francisco.
At the 76th Venice Film Festival, Brad Pitt speaking about space travel for his upcoming film, Ad Astra.
In Ad Astra, Pitt plays an astronaut who is sent to outer space to look for his father. His dad, played by Tommy Lee Jones, disappeared during a mission that is said to have been aimed at finding advanced extraterrestrial life, but also experimented with material threatening the entire solar system. When asked if he believes in extraterrestrial life,
I like to believe there is somewhere. To what degree? More advanced than us? Less? Who knows? I like to believe there is.
While he believes life exists outside of Earth, Pitt says he wouldn't be too keen to travel to space, even if given the chance.
Certainly in my younger years I would have. Now it's like, yeah, how long? How long do I gotta be away from home, my loved ones? What's the setup? Camping? Nah. On the moon? Probably not.
Ad Astra will hit theaters on September 20th.
And that's all for today's NTD Midday News. Join us again this evening. I'm Emily Ho.